Silence. Silence in the court. Silence in the court of cyber. We do not need any yapping in the courtroom. So, today on the show, today we are talking about threat intelligence. Tanks are good. Soldiers are good. Battleships are good. In a war. In cyber, that translates it to antivirus, firewalls, and other cyber technologies. But threat intelligence is something that is overarching and gives a clear overlook of what threats are out there, where to put the tanks, where to put the battleships. So threat intelligence is eyes beyond perimeter that enables us to prepare to fight and prepare our efforts in protecting our digital presence. So today's episode name is 2024 through the eyes of a threat intelligence analyst. Today's show guest is from Recorded Future, Maciej Martinek. I am Ronnie from NeverHack. Hello, Maciej.
Hello.
And call to action. If you like this episode, then please like, follow, comment, and tell your friends that cyber is good. And they need to listen to the Cybercast podcast. If you have any interesting topics that you would like for us to cover, then please contact us from anywhere you see a link, contact, or just write an email to cybercast@neverhack.com. So, Maciej, please tell a little bit about yourself.
First of all, thanks for having me. I'm pretty honored to be here, your interviewee, if I can call myself like this. So I'm a security engineer with, let's say, more than 10 years of the background working in different roles. But mainly focusing on helping organizations in our region, which is Baltic states, Central Eastern Europe, in increasing their defenses, incorporating cyber threat intelligence into optimize their security operations and stuff. And you know, this is my daily routine.
So your daily routine is to see where the enemy lies, right?
Yeah. So what they do, what they like to do, when they have their breaks, what are their behaviors. So everything that might be insightful and really help to leverage the blue teams and the defenses, this is something I like. And I hope others like too.
Yes, that's pretty useful information for soldiers on the ground, right? So, but what has happened in 2024? Are there any kind of significant behavior changes?
That's a very good starting question, I have to say, because it opens a quite huge topic. I'd like to start with saying that 2024 was a quite interesting year. I'm not saying it like a populism stuff, but it was indeed quite interesting year. And it was, I think, shaped by two primary trends. First of all, was the resiliency of cyber criminals in the face of them being seized and disrupted by law enforcement. Okay. We had a couple of examples like that, huge examples.
Lockbit was one of them?
Of course, Lockbit was one of them. All the stuff that are related to the operational Kronos and seizing their infrastructure, their leadership, showed that this was a quite huge topic last year. Additionally, the complexity of organizations' attack surface was a trend number two that originated quite heavily here.
Okay. So what does the, you know, it has been like half a year or so about the Lockbit. Has there something happened with the Lockbit after the kind of lockdown or takedown?
I think that we should really take a closer look to this entire situation that happened. The primary outcome is that cyber criminals were very effective and very smooth in transitioning to new ransomware gangs, to new providers of ransomware, to new sources of code for ransomware after something that happened to Lockbit. That shows that their, let's say, maturity level as entire business is quite high. Because after seizing the Lockbit, we observed a small decrease in the total number of ransomware victims. However, that didn't take long. This was a baseline situation That happened only for a couple of weeks. After that, the numbers went back on track to the very increasing in the total number of victims, total number of effective cyber attacks. So that all directs us to this conclusion that their business is quite healthy. Yeah, their business is very healthy. And all that also showed that all the ransomware gangs are very highly focused on ROI to get things done fast, to get the return of their investment in the infrastructure, in the tooling, and everything, all of their efforts and time from the affiliates to take it back quite fast. And you know, just to put some additional numbers on it, do you know what is the average ransom that was paid in 2024?
No, I don't.
It's $9.5 million.
Average.
Yeah, the median was 1.5, just to put it into the perspective.
That's like global.
That's like global stats, of course. And we also observed the record-breaking ransom being paid, which was, I think, something about $70 million.
Oh, yes.
Everything that shows business is healthy. Their abilities to transition is
fast.
Yeah.
It's
so scary. Yeah.
So this kind of leads to that. You know, there was when Lockbit was taken down. It was quiet for a couple of weeks, and new extortion sites begin to spin up, kind of like fill the market. Or should we look at it that way? Or
oh yeah, of course. So we observed like many new kids on the block, if I can call them like this. I think no one will be will feel bad me calling it like this. So the numbers also support what you said. So after Lockbit was taken down, mid-year, the rise of new gangs that were filling the gap was impressive. So in only 2024, there were 56 new ransomware extortion sites produced, new ones, never existing before. Comparing it to 2023, the number was it's not the best way to point it this way, but the number in 2023 was 32 new extortion sites versus 56 in 2024. And I think this trend will be kept, and the total number in this year, 2025, will be even more.
So what does it mean, new extortion sites, like groups or?
Oh, yeah. So definitely. So those are the places where all the successful attacks are being published. All the announcements that we have breached organization XYZ with the clear evidence of it, with the information about how much do any of us have to pay to get their data or the sample of their data, or that how much time is left for them to pay the ransom. Otherwise, some few terabytes of quite sensitive information might just went public.
So the sites that you're talking about is like the kind of Hall of Fame or...
Or other Hall of Shame.
Hall of Shame. Yes, like announcing that we did this and kind of this is our success rate. And
oh, yeah. So definitely, as we said, this is a business. And someone can even say that those sites are their like marketing sites or a portfolio of all the nice fishes that they catched thanks to their new ransomware variants and other toolset that they honestly were using. So yeah, you're quite accurate about calling it like this.
So how has that changed the reality? We from the good side, what kind of new visibility or what kind of how do we need to adapt for this change?
Oh, this is a very good question that can share some light on how to react, because I think all this information is good, but to then apply it somehow to make a good use of it. So definitely, we need to know what we need to defend against. So gaining any kind of visibility into who is targeting who, what are the industries that are getting targeted, what are the locations, countries, what are the motivations? Is it the pure money or is there some like geopolitical affair or some other business-related motivations underneath that? What are the tools are being used? What is the new malware variants? What is the combination of it? All these insights allow organizations then to adapt, but they need to know against who they are fighting. So what is their primary enemy? What is their behaviors? Because only based on this, if we really know our threat landscape, and I would like to highlight the word our threat landscape, because for organizations in Estonia, in the manufacturing or finance, it might look completely different than the ones in Poland.
So is there I don't know, other like gangs that are targeting specific verticals or?
Oh yeah, we can definitely profile many of those. So if we just take a closer look at the top five from most active ransomware gangs last year, 2024.
Globally. Oh, okay.
And we put like a metric of the, because there might be many metrics, like new malware variants or total number of campaigns being trying to launched, etc. I think the most fair metric to measure the global presence is the total number of victims, successful, which stands to the successful attacks. Lockbit was still number one. So that shows how powerful the gang was. Mm-hmm.
Taken down from in the middle of last year, and they are still number one.
Still number one with over 500 victims. Yeah. So with number two, it's a ransom hub. They popped up in February. So the first activities, our INSI groups, our inside research team identified their activity beginning from February. They had also over 500 unique victims. Yeah? And if we take a closer look, also in the Baltic states, they, and number four, which is Hunters International, were also quite active over here. Plus some maybe more local focused threat actors like FunkSec and InCransom that you could also see targeting specifically verticals in Baltic states, governmental, healthcare, manufacturing. Yeah, those were the top ones.
So this is interesting. So trends in Baltics and I don't know, Baltics and Central Europe, or how do you look at that? Is it do you see any groups that that work primarily in the Baltics or primarily in Central Europe targeting there or?
So I think we are not that far different in terms if we take our part of Europe from the global statistics. All because in our region, the most effective businesses are still software, manufacturing, also finance, which are the top targets for global ransomware gangs. So this is no difference. Yeah, they're targeting the profitable companies, and those are in those industries. So this is the reason why those bad guys are also attracted in organizations in our region. So this is it. But you can also find the ones that are mainly in the hacktivists style that are targeting especially Baltic states, Poland, and also all the other countries that officially express any kind of support for the war in Ukraine that is obviously happening since more than 2 years right now.
Mm-hmm. So are there any notable events in the Baltics or in Central Europe?
Yeah, we can name a few. Definitely we can take a closer look at activities of the info stealers, because I didn't mention this before, but those info stealers are quite effective and quite enormous in terms of their reach right now. And all the initial access brokers that are operating those really do the great job here, especially here in Estonia. So if we consider all the unique victims of the malware like Luma C2, the numbers in Estonia are quite quite high comparing to other countries in Central Eastern Europe. That can be quite easily explained why. The adoption of SaaS applications here and the adoption of software here, logging to e-governance with your credentials and being able to take those accounts, that's pure money.
So what about other notable events in the Baltics?
There were a few. We shared some airtime to Logbit Gang, so I think it will be fair to highlight their success here in Estonia for a successful cyber attack of Energate. I think it was back in July 2024, and yeah, all their data went just simply public. Also here in the Baltics, just to name also other few, Smartlinks Airlines, yeah? That's the job done by Hunters International, basically, and also Retail Baltic Films in Kranssumer in Lithuania. They were primarily active there. We could track them, and our in-situ research says that those were the ones that were highly effective in the Baltic states in 2024.
Mm-hmm. So we're no different in that sense. We are just a small fraction of global statistics, but overall the top verticals being targeted is the same, and there is no difference there.
Oh, I 100% agree. Yeah, as we said before, the business that is being run here, it's not different that much from the one that's going in the Western world, especially in the US. Software base, manufacturing, finance, public sector, everything looks the same. So if our country is strong in this areas, then we will attract the biggest fish, the biggest fishes. So that's quite obvious.
So, you know, today's hot topic is generative AI. It's so big that we cannot go over that. We need to face it.
True.
And we need to talk about that as well. So, do bad guys use AI? How do they use that? What are the places where threat actors use that and succeed?
That's a very good question, because I think there is a lot of misconception around generative AI and its applications into the cyber threats. So, just to demystify it, two primary places when it was really used quite nicely, it was disinformation and phishing campaigns, not malware producing. I will cover the topic a little bit more in a second, but let's focus on those two, disinformation and phishing. So we need to know and be aware that throughout 2024, more than 2 billion people went to vote in the polls to select their governments. That happened obviously in US, in UK, that happened in France, in European Union. And these elections also provided the opportunity for state-aligned influence actors to attempt to a little bit disrupt and disinform public opinion with all of those deepfakes, all of those false statements, all of those junky information that was happening all around the social media and stuff. So that was... generative AI tools were basically used for those operations. And just to highlight a few, Russia, China, and Iran, they were all, each of them, engaged in this malign influence just to destabilize the Western democracies, the inflame political, some social tensions, of course, because if someone posts a video that looks exactly like one of the political or global leaders saying something politically wrong and surprising, that starts to concern people. However, I personally think that they fell short in terms of being like believable in this manner. So people were quickly, after I think quite nice campaigns from the governmental level on all of those deepfakes, to not trust everything what you see, etc. This is why they weren't that successful in terms of changing and influencing the politics heavily. However, where they were successful, and I have to admit it, is that believability was not the primary objective here. Overwhelming the information environment, pulling a lot of trash, junky content, inauthentic content, really degrade the overall quality of information. So people stopped really taking too much of the care what's going in the public news that limited their entire visibility into what's really going on.
Mm-hmm. So in the Middle Ages, it was like when someone wrote a book, then people believed that everything that is written in the book is the truth.
Yes.
Because why would anyone waste paper on false information or for nonsense, right?
Yeah.
So that was the belief, and we were also believing the internet. But today it has gone worse and worse.
Yeah. This is the trend that we are observing. Yeah. So right now, no one cares about the cost of the paper. No one cares about the cost of the bits and bytes that you're just throwing into the internet just by typing some random stuff. Yeah. The internet is full of it. And I think that we as a society and the receivers of those information really need to know that.
The source of that.
Yes, yeah, of course. Yeah. And I would also like to demystify this malware stuff and the generative AI part. Just because people are saying, oh, right now with the generative AI, everyone can write the malware and infect half of the world.
Mm-hmm. So like development is easier and so?
True, it's easier. The entry point to be a malware specialist with the support of generative AI is easier right now. However, I have to say that those malware deployments are not that effective. Humans still are creating a more accurate and more difficult to detect and evade and prevent malicious code. So all of those polymorphisms, mutex mechanisms, hiding the malicious behavior in memory, and all the other techniques that the generative AI is able to implement in their malware pieces, it's nothing new. It's nothing novel. Those are the things that our defenses and defensive technologies like EDRs, sandboxes, firewalls, and others are really able to catch. And we don't expect it to change just because all of those ELMs are not able to synthesize anything else. And this is due to the logic of all of those training data that they have from other malware, some attack kill chains. So this isn't something that we should be really worried about. The other two, like more sophisticated and more targeted phishing campaigns, easier reconnaissance to find the proper targets using the generative AI. Yeah, those are the places where threat actors might really be more beneficial from this.
So when predicting today, where is the development going to go tomorrow?
You think you say you ask about the predictions for 2025?
About the generative AI, is there something seen that, okay, this information and that is going to amplify even more? I would expect generating new variants of malware that has been effective even before LLMs. But is there something, you know, sparking from the ground?
Maybe sparking from the ground, it will be difficult to name one thing right now. However, in Recoded Future, our predictions for 2025 are that we will see at least one big, really big major breach that will likely result in generative AI being used for some kind of impersonation. And this is also like, if we look at the scene for 2025, it's like a recommendation for organizations to really take a closer look in terms of all the awareness campaigns for their employees.
Mm-hmm. So, as a customer or as a possible victim, What kind of sources to monitor or where to pay attention, where to put focus?
The short answer would be everywhere.
Okay. Yeah. That's difficult.
That's difficult. That's difficult because of the data volume, about the resources to process it, to understand it, multi-language barriers, just because those bad guys are not always fluent in English. They are Chinese-based, Russian-based, Korean-based, etc. Even though the dark web resources are being taken down and seized, there are a lot of interesting information out there. Monitoring those really helps. Monitoring ransomware extortion sites, monitoring all the malware reports that are showing what techniques do they implement those malware pieces. So we can take it back, make our lessons learned, and check if the defenses we have in our organization can really protect us against this. If yes, then this was a really actionable intelligence. It's because based on it, we performed some actions that helped us to reduce the risk.
Mm-hmm. So keeping focus to everything is really, really hard thing to do, and might not be even necessary. So it's kind of like a question of understanding in what vertical you are operating and what are the risks, primary risks, and try to somehow operationalize threat intel to make it meaningful.
Oh, you're 100% accurate. Yeah, because not every piece of information has the same value for us. Exactly like you described. Certain verticals, certain similarities, the cyber attack that happened to our industry peer is probably closer to our heart than the cyber attack that happened to other vertical in the US. So knowing that and having it profiled and tailored to our needs, this is a challenge, but you and I know we have tools to overcome it.
Mm-hmm. So it is. So, thank you, Maciej, for coming to the show.
My pleasure.
This is a really, really good topic, because you guys are the guys who are on the watch post. You see land far away. You see who's coming, who's doing what, and is it going past us or is it going to come and kill us? So that is the
hopefully not.
Hopefully not. Yes. And if they are coming, so this is this information helps us to be prepared and put our focus where it actually matters. If you, listener there who are hiking or in a traffic jam, listened to this show and liked it, then tell it to your friends or click that, you know, thumbs up button or leave a comment. Or even better, write us an email to cybercast@neverhack.com. But not while you're driving or hiking. That does not compute. And we are going to be back in 2 weeks or so. Yeah. So thank you, Maciej, again. And
thank you, Ronnie.
Until next time.